Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Andy. I needed to let you know that we are coming down to the wire on RebateJet.com. What's RebateJet? It's a platform I created for you guys, the small to medium-sized sellers trying to compete against those big brands with those big budgets. Go now to RebateJet.com, sign up for that free seller account before it goes away this month. Now, why do you want to be a part of RebateJet? Just a few things. You can list promo codes for free. You can offer 3 rebates free per day. You can list your products and sell them directly to our customers on our website. We even have a free liquidation marketplace for you to unload products that didn't work out. We also have something else crazy in the works. You guys are going to love it. Go now, RebateJet.com. Now onto the show.
Welcome to the Seller Roundtable e-commerce coaching and business strategies with Andy Arnott and Amy Wiese.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Andy Arnott, and this is Seller Roundtable number 50 with my co-host,
Amy Wiese.
And we're super excited to have Brandon Young on. I can't believe it's taken us this long. Brandon, welcome.
Yeah, great to be on. I know that we've tried in the past, but schedules didn't align. Travel, all that good stuff, but I'm glad I'm finally here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we're gonna shoot from the hip today, but we're going to start out with a couple of our standard questions. Just because, like Amy said, you know, you've been on a lot of podcasts and been interviewed a bunch, but we don't know too much about your past. So we're going to grill you there. So if you can share as little or as much as you like, but, you know, things like where you were born, where you live now, some past jobs, college, school, just kind of like, you know, leading up to the Amazon world.
Yeah. So, I mean, just to give you guys the brief version, I started out degree in finance, helping my family with their business, family business. Always been entrepreneurs. Wholesale construction supply industry. My father passed away in 2007. I decided to go back to school, get an MBA. Decided when we sold the business. Unfortunately, we sold it like at the downturn 2008, when construction was really plummeting. Everything was kind of poor. Kind of what we're about to get into now. Terrible economy, but. Then decided to get into, get into investing in startups, helping others with startups, help them with scaling and getting something profitable or investable. Met my now wife. We started Amazon in 2005, got married in 2007, right? Yeah. Gotta verify.
Right.
So, so then we, 2005, we started, we were doing wholesale. We started with, liquidation and wholesale. We wanted to try to do something a little bit more scalable than arbitrage. I wasn't really a fan of shopping, or to me, it was more of a job. And then had some issues with some of the brands getting gated. One of them in particular, because I went back to construction supply since I knew it and had contacts there. So I was selling DeWalt tools. And then they started to get gated. So I said, okay, that's not that sustainable. But my wife being from China, I said, all right, we need to go to China. Why aren't we doing private label? We have the connections over there. Like, you can help source it. We can do it. We have family. And so we went to Canton Fair in 2016. A couple months later, we launched our first private label products. And we've been doing only private label ever since, really.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. That's a interesting backstory. I love the backstory because, you know, the journey up to being an Amazon, being an Amazon, I hate saying Amazon seller. I used to say that, but now it's like, you know, being in e-commerce, because Amazon's only one of the platforms that we should all be utilizing. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I think you start to get more well-rounded. I think people, you have those different layers, and then you have a progression. You have people that come in that are just doing a side hustle. They're doing arbitrage or just flipping stuff. Those are just FBA sellers, right? And then if you can turn it into a full-time job and replace your job with it, then, you know, you start looking at things like wholesale and things that are just the way that you can scale that business. I mean, my good friends Max and Garland scaled to $10 million with arbitrage, but they had a huge warehouse, you know, 8 or 9 employees, shoppers, processors. You know, they treated it like a real business and were able to scale, but it was basically just arbitraging man hours at that point and finding deals and having people travel around. But that's not the ideal situation for most people. And most people are happy with just an extra few $1,000 a month, just flipping stuff that they find, you know, in stores. For us, it was always like, how do we create a real successful business out of this? So that's where wholesale and private label came in.
Yeah. Outstanding. So on that same note, I mean, what do you guys, I know that you have multiple brands, you know, seven, I think you're in seven and or maybe eight figures in some of those brands. You know, what are you guys doing today to scale those brands? Are you doing anything different? I know that you're bringing into chatbots. Anything else that you guys are doing today that you feel like kind of gives you an unfair advantage that you'll tell everybody here and they'll be like, yeah, that's a great idea, but only like 2% of them will actually go and execute.
You know, where I think our advantage lies is in our processes, right? Because we're able to move quickly. And I think that we have a really deep understanding of the algorithm and the latest changes in the algorithm, and we stay on top of that. So we're able to launch products, pick better products because of our keyword research strategy, but also launch products more effectively and more efficiently because we understand what Amazon wants exactly to rank a product. All the data is there, everything's available at your fingertips, but if you don't really understand how the algorithm works or why, then you don't know how to implement that. And I think a lot of people are still throwing darts with choosing products. And I think a lot of people are still burning a lot of money and lighting a lot of money on fire with bad launch strategies.
Yeah, absolutely. So Amy and I harp on, you know, all the sourcing tools, right? we're not harping on any of the people that run those tools. You know, as you know, it's a small community. I love all those guys, but you know, the Jungle Scouts and the, you know, Viral Launch, you know, and Helium 10, you know, they all have these, you know, quote unquote, like sourcing tools, right? You're not a big fan of those things either, are you? Because to me, you know, they have a place in terms of data, but you know, so many people use those as the starting point and the ending point of picking a product. And that's why you end up with thousands of people with fidget spinners sitting in a warehouse, right?
Yeah, I mean, so to me, like, it's a danger for everyone to be putting the same numbers into a software and getting the same results back. And to me, it's an even, you know, you get a lot of the fake gurus out there that have courses or whatever that teach a certain methodology that's going to lead to all of their students finding the same few products also. So that's why, like you said, you have 20 pages of people that are stuck with scratch off maps and all of the other products that we know that everyone has that they got stuck with because it looked like a good opportunity at the time, margin was good, and then all of a sudden they launch it along with 200 other people that launched it, you know, and it's the same exact product with the same exact images. And so it's so I do like using some of those tools just to put in my, like, I'll put in different criteria. Like, I'll use like Helium 10's black box. You mentioned that each one has their own, like, you know, they all have, but I'll keep changing that criteria. And then I'll look at, if I find a successful seller in a niche, I'll look at their storefront and I'll look at what else they're selling or launching. I'll look at like another methodology that we have that I created is called like the audience method. So I won't search for a specific product, but I'll search for the audience that I want to sell to. So if I want to search for, sell something to fishermen, I'll actually just go to Amazon and I'll search for fishermen. And it's funny because I don't care what's on page one for fishermen. Like, no one's going on Amazon and trying to buy fishermen and searching for just fishermen. But if your product is for fishermen, then it's probably indexed for fishermen, but it might be on page 15, right? So then I can just go through 20, 30 pages of the results for that and find products that are selling more than 10 or 20 a day and find out, okay, now how are they getting their sales? What are the real keywords they're ranked on to get those sales? And so I use that methodology a lot too. And then I just get ideas, like, that's why I go to trade shows too. I think going to trade shows and just getting ideas while you're walking around booths is really important. Another good thing that we do is, like, we'll go to showrooms, which is basically the same as going to a show, but it's more, more private. So, like, for example, we have like three toy brands, and in Shantou in China, they have these showrooms that you can go into. And the business model is this: it looks like a Target or a Walmart, and it's like five stories high, and every single floor has this section. And in that section are a bunch of different random toys, and that's one entire factory's representation. Then you go to the next section, it's another factory. So it's like every section on this floor as you're going is different factories. And then they follow you around. They treat the buyers like gold. So what they're doing is they're charging the factories to be in there because there's 12,000 toy factories in Shantou. And they're charging all of the factories to be in there. But then the buyers come in, they follow you around with a cart. You point to a product on the wall. They scan it. And if it's a they, if you want it, they'll put it in the cart so you can go back later and play with it in a private room and test it and stuff. And then at the end, everything that you scanned is given to you on a printout sheet and digitally so that you have the contact information for the factory, the price, and everything.
So it's kind of like at Global Sources where they do like the matching, or some of the trade shows where they do the matching services with matching with the factories. Can we talk about the food in Chanteau for a second? Can we just talk
about where are you going to go with that? Food? Where are you going to go with that?
Oh, it's so good. The food in Chanteau is incredible. You don't like it?
Oh my gosh. All right, so funny thing is, right before the Chinese New Year, right before we almost got stuck there with the virus, we were there. We were finalizing a bunch of orders. That's when we were supposed to speak, I think. Like, I was over there already. And one of the factory owners we went and visited to finalize a deal for like 3 or 4 different SKUs, he's like, I insist, I got to take you to lunch. And I was like, no, I don't really want to go to lunch, because like I do like how the showrooms bring you food and it's great. Like it's not bad. There are some good places. But this guy's insisting. And so he takes us to this place. It's a slum. It's straight up just a slum. And he brings us to this, you can't describe it as more than a shack. You've got these tables that are held together. It looks like something that you would cut a tree and make your own table. And then there's just these buckets that they're washing all the dishes in.
Next
to where we're eating. And then you see the fish and you see the fresh food that they're cooking, and it's all raw. And then they're just pulling it out, breaking like the heads off with their hands and throwing it in the pots. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is going to be abysmal.
That is the complete opposite of my experience.
That was my last experience eating in Chanteau, just so you know. So when you said, how about the food in Chanteau? That's immediately what I thought of. I thought you were going to go there.
We have to try again. I definitely want to check out this. I definitely want to check out this place that you went to. I need to shop this place. I don't know. I don't have any toys. I'm in the pet area, but yeah, I would definitely love to check that out. And we need to take you to a better restaurant in Chanteau. Clearly.
Yes. I've been to a couple good places. It's not bad. What's amazing is like you go there and a hotel costs you $25 a night.
Yeah.
You're like staying in a place that's better than a day. Like, it's not, you're not at the Marriott, right? But you're not at a motel. It's decent. There's a chain that we stay at called, what's the flower? What is it? Lavendy. So it's like lavender, but with an E, with no R. And they have them all throughout China, and they're $25, $30 a night. Maybe if there's like the Canton Fair going on, it's $60. But like, it's the most affordable place to stay, and it's fine. Nice, comfortable beds. Nice. It's all remodeled. Showers are beautiful. Like, you know, I can't ask for more. I'm not spending too much time there. Yeah.
So this place Chanteau's that you talked about in Chanteau, is it open all year round, kind of like Iwu is? Is it more of like a market, or is it a seasonal kind of thing?
No, they are open all year round. So there's multiple, right? They all compete against each other. So they're all trying to treat the buyers better and trying to groom the sellers, like the factories, put their stuff in there. They verify that they're real factories. They're open year round. You can't get access unless you go through a broker though, because you have to verify that you're a broker. So they don't just do end sellers. You can't go knock on the door and just walk in. So we just, from our contacts and our team there, we were able to get in.
Very cool. So I love that you use, you know, lots of different ways. You talked about, you of course use tools, but you're also just using common sense. You know, you're looking at Amazon, you're searching for some things, you're checking out what the results say. And I love that, because, you know, it's all right there in front of us. And I think sometimes people just generally overthink it. And, you know, if we just think about it as supply and demand and what's out there, and we look at opportunities, you can just use Amazon as a way to do your research. And then you use the other tools as data points. So I love that. I saw your kind of a little bit of what you do with keywords, and I took some from that, as well as improved some of my PPC strategies using your techniques as well. So I definitely appreciate learning from all different techniques.
That's awesome.
I agree that it's really important to keep on top of the ever-changing landscape with the algorithm, because Amazon's a search engine and you need to get found. And if you're not keeping up with those things, you're not going to be found. And if you're not converting, if you're not paying attention to what you're doing and converting, you're going to get lost. So many people, as you mentioned, you know, they've got products out there and they're just not making sales and they're not looking at it from a customer's perspective. Do you do any of that, Brandon? Do you ever kind of just go through your listings and look at them from a customer's perspective and kind of check out what competitors are showing up on your page? What do you do in terms of after you've launched, kind of keeping up with your listings and taking a look at the landscape?
Yeah, we're always iterating and trying to improve. I mean, it's one of those things where it's the quest for perfection. Like perfection is impossible, but I always have my my employees. Now it's more out of my hands. So I actually have launch. Like I still handle a lot of the launch, but the growth team is its own team in that we have. And so what we have them doing is just constantly going back and trying new main images, testing coupons versus Amazon Prime, you know, discounts, testing different price points and seeing where we need to be as far as, you know, optimizing the listing and optimizing the price to keep maintain keyword ranks. And then they're handling PPC on that end too. Like we talk about a lot of the PPC and it's only more recent, like in the last year or so, that PPC has started to play either a positive or negative impact on keyword ranks. It used to be that 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the good old days, the more you spent on PPC, the better your listing did, no matter if it was profitable or not or how it was converting. You could basically just spend your way to the top of anything. Nowadays, if your PPC is performing poorly, it has a negative impact on your overall performance of your listing. So if your overall conversion rate goes down below your competition or your click-through rate's lower because your PPC isn't getting clicks or conversion, then it's going to negatively impact those keyword ranks. And then those organic keyword ranks are what drives the organic sales. And so it's a downward spiral. I see a lot of people that are, their listing starts to slide, so they spend more in PPC, which causes it to slide even more, which means now your tacos, like your overall PPC sales to regular sales, starts to go the wrong direction, right? You're trying to, you know, you end up with a less profitable product over time instead of more. So I think the biggest thing for us is just constantly measuring, making small incremental changes and measuring what exactly that's doing to our listing, positive or negative, so that we can constantly make those incremental improvements.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize that no matter how much you increase a bid, if you're not converting well, that data is going to count against you and you're just going to keep fighting a losing battle. So it's really great that you find that out and that you recommend that people are making those little small changes and then actually seeing what the results are. I know Andy talks about that a lot.
Yeah, and the other thing I've heard Brandon talk about, which is the same thing we do, is the mid-tail keywords, right? Like the going for the primary keywords are great, but once again, if you're in even a slightly competitive niche, against fighting against a big established brand, those guys have unlimited budgets, right? So they can just, as soon as you raise your bid, they can raise their bid and they'll just keep doing it and until you go negative. So, you know, going for those mid-tail, long-tail keywords on PPC is really how as a little guy, you can actually compete against some of these mega brands.
Yeah, a lot of the major brands we've found, like we love competing against them. And it's funny, when I was at the toy show a few weeks ago, just walking around and looking at all the major brands that are there and then just quickly doing a search on Amazon for the products, it was like, man, they are bad at Amazon. But then of course, like, so I was there and my good friend Eddie Levine is a brand manager and he manages a bunch of brands and obviously he wouldn't tell me which ones he manages, but I would just ask them. I was like, hey, so who does your Amazon stuff? Oh, we do it in-house. We're good on that. Like I didn't want to manage their Amazon brand. I was just wondering if they do it in-house or have someone. And then they would all insist like, oh, they're pros, right? Like they have a team and they're really good at it, but obviously they aren't. They just don't understand the extra layer of research that you can do to find those long tail keywords. That's what separates, I think, when you choose a product that could potentially become competitive, the only reason you should choose that product in the first place is if it has a lot of good keywords to sell on. Because what distinguishes you from somebody else would be, can you rank for the majority of those keywords when they can't? And I think that's the bottom line. Most sellers don't know how to A, find those keywords, B, and then B, rank on them. And if you can do both of those things, you're just going to stay ahead of them anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I love to pick on you. You know, we're mentioning big brands, Stanley Tools. Go and do a search for Stanley Tools on Amazon.
And we actually have, there, yeah.
Yeah, we have a couple of competing products with Stanley Tools. And
me too.
I love to use it as an example because they absolutely are horrible. I mean, literally like one of their screwdrivers, it says like Phillips head screwdriver. That's the title. And I'm like, holy.
That's the whole title. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they, now they have a toy. So I sell toy tools against them. And so they're launching their Stanley Juniors and their other tools. Like they're launching more of a toy brand because they did the real tools that are for kids and they were showing up on some of our keywords, but they're way down and not doing very, very well. And now they're launching actual toys against us. So I asked them, I was like, oh, that's great. You guys are launching this. When is it live? Who's doing your Amazon? And they're like, yeah, they were one of the people that said, yeah, we're good. We do it out of, like, I guess they're out of Germany or something. And it's like, yeah, we're good. I'm like, yeah, sure. Okay, good job.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's where, and that's why I still tell so many people that, you know, even though it's getting really, really hard to compete on Amazon, there is still a huge opportunity if you know what you're doing. The people Absolutely. Who are turning dials are the ones who are going to do well because, you know, they're finding those little edges that the big companies, you know, either are too ignorant to know about or just don't take the time to learn, right? They're not turning dials. Once those big corporations, you know, have their processes in place, that's what they use, right? Like, oh, here's how you launch and here's the process, even though like a month ago the algorithms changed or there's a new ad, you know, like video ad that spun up on Amazon, you know, that they don't even know about till like next year, right?
I think like a lot of them completely ignore it too, Andy, because, you know, like Stanley, for example, yeah, their stuff is terrible on Amazon, but they've got such a large retail presence. And I've worked with some bigger brands that are wanting to get into e-commerce, and it's almost like they ignore the fact that you have to have e-commerce knowledge. They think that, okay, we can just post our products up there and then they'll just sell because they're so used to just shipping a product to retail and then waiting for their next order. But what they forget, I think, is that if you are in Walmart or Costco or Target or something like that, you've got to have a team to manage that store, right? Stanley, I'm sure, has a team for Home Depot. I'm sure they have a team for Lowe's, but I doubt that they've put any time or effort into their team for Amazon. And that's a huge mistake in my opinion.
Well, they do. I guarantee you, they do have a team for Amazon, but it's one person who's in charge of everything, right? They're like the marketer, the list, you know, putting up the listings, like they're probably doing everything or they've hired, you know, some other, agency who's a marketing agency who doesn't really know that much about Amazon. But
I think what happens too is Amazon reaches out to a lot of these big brands, and Amazon's like, yeah, we'll help you out. We'll get you all set up. And you guys know what a joke that is, right? So these big brands, you know, I've worked with a few of them, and their staff has worked directly with Amazon, and then they'll come with me on a consulting call and I'll be training them on just some basics like SEO, listing optimization. And I'm like, okay, well, what do you know about what's your main keyword here? What kind of keywords are you guys targeting? And they're like, keywords, Amazon just puts those in for us, I think.
Yeah. What are you talking about? It's Phillips screwdriver.
Yeah, exactly. Phillips screwdriver. I love it. Yeah, it's really interesting though. I agree. There's so much ground that can be covered in the e-commerce side of things, and you don't have to be afraid to compete with the big brands. And in many times, the big brands, Amazon's the least of their concern. You know, they have a huge opportunity there that they're missing out on. But that's a great place for e-commerce sellers to take advantage.
Yeah, it's funny, these big brands, like not only the big brands, but big agencies, even big publications. So Search Engine Journal, if you guys don't know about it, is like a huge SEO publication. If you're doing like web SEO and things like that, they're spot on every time. Like really, really good stuff. But they recently posted an article about Amazon PPC, and it was they were literally like completely wrong. And, you know, leading people down the trail that would, you know, would not work well for them if they followed that advice. So it's interesting that, you know, in my opinion, if you're going to go for Amazon advice, look at people like Brandon, you know, some of these people who are turning dials and actually like in the trenches. I have a hard time believing anybody who's never sold on Amazon, right? I mean, that to me, that's a little bit of a red flag in terms of, you know, it's a Google agency, Google ad or Facebook ad agencies that's like, hey, yeah, now we're doing Amazon, right? Because to me, they're lacking that expertise and the years of knowledge of turning dials.
It's a completely different learning curve. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So Brandon, do you do like a 80-20? I know that you're probably, if you're anything like Amy and I, you know, you've always got these like little ideas, little projects in your head, and it's hard to stay focused. Are you working on any kind of fun side projects besides e-commerce and Amazon?
I've always got a million things I want to do. You're absolutely right. And yeah. The only one that keeps me steered in the right direction is my wife. So that's why we make such a good team. But, you know, we've got a couple of things that we're doing. We've got a software project we're working on or two. We've got, you know, some off Amazon investments that we're working on. Yeah. So there's always some things that we're doing a little bit off of Amazon. One of the big things that we're trying to figure out right now is I want to start investing in my students. So the Inner Circle students that show a lot of promise, that have launched a product or two, have shown that they understand the methodology, work hard, execute it well, are smart and capable, you know, I want to kind of accelerate their growth. So I want to do like an accelerator program where I give them some cash. They get free membership into the Inner Circle for the rest of their, you know, career, whatever it is. And then maybe some extra one-on-one time every month and kind of build a portfolio of companies that I'm growing that way. So it's a good investment portfolio for me, a good way to diversify. It's still within the Amazon sphere, so it's not really diversified that way. But I still think Amazon is the best dollar for dollar investment in the world right now. So, you know, there's only so much we can do personally with ourselves and our teams. So then we have another, besides investing in students, then we're going to start building up pockets of teams. So the way that they scale in China is slightly different. And my wife likes to lean that direction, which is we take the talented Amazon employees or employees that have worked for other companies that have shown promise, but they don't have their own capital. And we fund basically a new entity with them. And, we just do a profit share with them and help them grow and spawn off. It's kind of the way Anchor did it, Aki, a lot of these other companies. They would just take like a team of three people that you know, for tasks, and they would, you know, fund and say, you have carte blanche to pick a niche in a product or a few products and start launching. You have to launch X amount of products. Like their KPIs would be launching X amount of products per month. And then it would be slightly overseen, but like most, for the most part, pretty autonomous, which means it would be a really scalable. And then once they had success a few months in, then you can graduate one of those people to another team leader and then just keep growing it that way and just scale that way. So that's another way that we're looking to build up more portfolios, owner, you know, and wealth within, you know, the amazing opportunity that Amazon FBA is and private label is.
Yeah, I love it. So it's like little Amazon strike team commandos, right? So you're getting the three-man team out,
Yeah, 100%. And what's amazing is like once you get to the scale, then you have those economies of scale that start to kick in, and like the software we're creating can help to automate a lot of those processes. We can, for my students and the people that we invest in, then we can help with logistics and consolidating, shipments to bring down costs and PPC help and all the Inner Circle training we already do. But on top of that, the actual real stuff that will bring down a lot of those costs at scale. That they normally wouldn't have access to as a new startup or a new business.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in to part one of this episode. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for live Q&A and bonus content after the recording at sellerroundtable.com. Sponsored by the ultimate software tool for Amazon sales and growth, sellerseo.com and amazingathome.com.